Ekatra Foundation presents the Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Imagine arriving in a brand new country with, well, absolutely nothing, no family, no connections, just raw intellect and this unshakable, almost desperate drive to prove yourself.
Yeah.
What kind of person does that forge, you know? And what kind of monumental legacy could they possibly build?
Mm-hmm.
That, for you, is the compelling question at the heart of our deep dive today. We're talking about a figure whose face graces your $10 bill, Alexander Hamilton.
Right.
But trust me, his true story is far more complex, foundational, and frankly more jaw-dropping than any monetary portrait could ever convey.
Indeed. And we're diving deep into Ron Chernow's monumental Pulitzer-winning biography, Alexander Hamilton. Chernow's central argument is, well, it's nothing short of revolutionary, really, that Hamilton, an outsider from birth, was arguably the principal architect of the modern American state and its economic powerhouse status. It fundamentally challenges that old historical caricature of him as merely an elitist.
Right, just some aristocratic figure. And our mission today is to cut through those myths. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to understand who was the real Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah.
What is his true, often debated place in the American story? And crucially, why does his vision still impact your world today? Let's unpack this incredible life, starting from its most improbable origins.
Okay, so his beginnings are truly the stuff of legend. It's a classic immigrant saga of adversity, really.
Mm-hmm.
Born illegitimate on the Caribbean island of Nevis, Hamilton was orphaned young and left completely destitute. This wasn't just hardship. Chernow argues it was a crucible that forged a superhuman resilience, a prodigious intellect, and this unquenchable thirst for fame and legacy.
It's astonishing to come from such utter destitution and that through sheer intellect and like a remarkable ability to articulate, to have local businessmen pool resources for your education. What does Chernow suggest this ticket out really represented for Hamilton beyond just escaping poverty?
Mm.
How did that early recognition sort of impact his future drive?
Well, it was profoundly formative. This chaotic and frankly insecure childhood instilled in him a lifelong craving for order, legitimacy, structure, which manifested directly in his later drive for a strong federal government. What's also fascinating here is his unique advantage as an immigrant.
How so?
He had no allegiance to a single state, you know, like Virginia or Massachusetts. His loyalty was solely to the concept of the United States as a whole.
Interesting.
Which allowed him to think in truly national terms from the very beginning. This really underpins Chernow's theme of the immigrant's unique contribution, seeing the nation not just as a collection of parts, but as a singular entity.
That makes so much sense. So his very lack of a state-centric identity mm-hmm. allowed him to envision a united nation maybe more clearly than others who are, you know, deeply embedded in their regional loyalties. So from the Caribbean, he lands in New York, and his rise is just meteoric. He enrolls at King's College, now Columbia University.
All right.
And almost instantly becomes this powerful revolutionary pamphleteer and orator. I mean, that's an astonishing intellectual force for someone so young, isn't it?
Absolutely. He quickly gained renown, articulating the patriot cause with a brilliance that definitely caught the attention of the era's great minds.
Yeah.
When the Revolutionary War broke out, he didn't hesitate, dropped his studies, joined the fight, and distinguished himself through bravery and skill as an artillery captain.
And it was his sharp intellect and maybe administrative genius that caught the eye of none other than General George Washington.
Mm.
How pivotal was that relationship? What did Hamilton learn at Washington's side during the war?
Oh, it was arguably the most pivotal relationship of his life, a kind of surrogate father-son dynamic almost that would really define the founding era.
Wow.
Hamilton became Washington's indispensable pen and aide-de-camp for four crucial years during the war.
4 years.
And this direct exposure to the fatal weaknesses of the Continental Congress and the Articles of Confederation. You know, a government notoriously unable to tax, raise an army, enforce its own laws.
Right, a total mess.
It was a foundational moment for his later policies. He saw firsthand the chaos of a decentralized government and became absolutely unshakably convinced of the necessity for a strong, centralized national government.
Okay, so after the war, the nation is technically independent, but practically, like you said, a mess.
Yeah.
Hamilton transitions from the battlefield to the intellectual political arenas.
Mm-hmm.
He marries Elizabeth Schuyler, which connects him to a powerful New York family, but his focus, his driving obsession, it seems, remains squarely on political reform. advocating fiercely for a new, stronger government.
Yes, he became a key agitator for the Constitutional Convention. And while some of his more radical ideas, like a president serving for life, were rejected.
Right, that was a bit much, maybe.
His influence there was profound nonetheless. But his greatest intellectual contribution to actually securing the Constitution's ratification was conceiving of and largely authoring the Federalist Papers.
Oh, right. The Federalist Papers.
He wrote an incredible 51 of the 85 essays himself.
51? That's not just an intellectual marathon. That's a foundational act of political theory.
It truly is. And it produced what is still considered this brilliant, enduring exposition of constitutional principles, arguably the single most important work of American political philosophy.
Wow.
And Chernow uses this to showcase Hamilton's enduring power of the written word. It was his primary weapon, you know, to shape public opinion and ultimately to build a nation's very operating system.
So with the Constitution ratified, Hamilton's vision was still largely theoretical, I guess.
Sure.
It was as Washington's first Secretary of the Treasury that he would truly begin to build the nation's economic engine. What was the state of affairs he inherited? What audacious plans did he lay out?
Well, he inherited a bankrupt nation, non-existent credit, just dire straits. Yeah. His solution was a series of audacious reports to Congress that collectively formed his financial revolution, as Chernow calls it. The first was the report on public credit.
Right.
Hamilton argued that the federal government must assume the revolutionary war debts of the individual states.
Assume the state debts.
And pay off all debts at face value. This was highly controversial, incredibly so.
I bet. Why?
Well, some states had already paid off much of their debt, others hadn't. But his goal was profoundly strategic.
Okay.
To bind the states and wealthy creditors directly to the success of the new federal government. If the government failed, they'd lose their money. So it gave them a vested interest in its stability.
Ah, okay. So this wasn't just about balancing the books. It was a deeply strategic move to bind disparate interests to the fledgling federal government.
Exactly.
That famous, somewhat controversial line, a national debt, if it is not excessive, will be to us a national blessing. How does Chernow fully contextualize that for us? What kind of leverage was Hamilton aiming for there?
He was basically asserting that a manageable national debt, backed by federal taxing power, created robust national credit and acted as a unifying economic force.
Okay.
It fostered financial stability and national unity by ensuring the success of the federal government was directly tied to the financial health of its most influential citizens.
Smart, right.
Very smart. Okay, what came next?
Next came the report on a national bank, proposing the creation of the first bank of the United States, modeled somewhat on the Bank of England.
The National Bank. Okay, big one.
Huge. And this triggered the first great constitutional debate. It pitted Hamilton's view of implied powers, arguing the bank was necessary and proper for the government to execute its enumerated powers, the ones listed in the Constitution,
right,
against Thomas Jefferson's strict constructionist view. Jefferson believed the federal government could only do what the Constitution explicitly allowed, not what was merely convenient or helpful.
And Washington sided with.
Washington sided with Hamilton. Yeah. And that decision set a vital precedent for expansive federal authority. Huge implications down the line. That's a monumental decision,
yeah,
essentially establishing the scope of federal power right at the outset. It's a debate that honestly echoes even today, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's foundational.
And then there's the report on manufacturers. Sounds maybe less exciting than a national bank, but Chernow suggests it was incredibly visionary.
Yeah, it really was a blueprint for America's future economic independence. In this document, Hamilton laid out this whole vision for tariffs and government subsidies to encourage domestic industry to reduce reliance on European powers.
Okay.
Now, it was largely ignored at the time, politically difficult.
Right.
But Chernow argues it was the foundational text for the American Industrial Revolution that would unfold in the 19th century. It really set the stage for America's rise as a manufacturing power, even if it took a while.
So you can clearly see the blueprint for modern industrialized America emerging right there in his reports.
Definitely.
But these policies, while brilliant and ultimately successful, they had an immediate, profound consequence. The birth of political parties.
Yes, the Great Divide.
It created this deep ideological chasm between Hamilton's Federalists, with their commercial industrial vision and strong central government, and Jefferson and Madison's Democratic Republicans, who champions states' rights and an agrarian ideal.
Mm-hmm.
This conflict, in many ways, still defines our political landscape today, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It just demonstrates how deep and fundamental those early disagreements were about the very nature of American governance and the economy.
Okay, so we've seen Hamilton as the brilliant public architect crafting the nation's economic and governmental foundations. But for all his genius in the public sphere, his private life presented a stark contrast, often tumultuous and, well, frankly, scandalous.
Yeah, there's that whole other side.
Let's delve into that complexity. Specifically, the Maria Reynolds affair. This became America's first major political sex scandal, right?
It did.
And his decision to publish the explicit details to clear his name of financial corruption, despite humiliating his wife, Eliza. It's almost unbelievable.
It is. And what's fascinating here is how Treno uses this to discuss the intense interplay of public service and private life in the early republic.
Okay.
Hamilton's character flaws, his pride, his impulsiveness, maybe poor judgment in personal matters, they stood in really stark contrast to his public genius.
Right.
In the nascent American Republic, the character and honor of its leaders weren't just personal matters. They were subjects of intense public scrutiny and potent political weapons. His decision, while driven by this need to clear his public financial name, it also revealed a profound, almost self-destructive streak.
Which, unfortunately, brings us to the tragic climax of his life.
Yeah.
His long, bitter rivalry with Aaron Burr.
Burr.
This wasn't just political disagreement. It was deeply personal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It festered for years.
Yeah. Deep animosity.
Hamilton's intervention in the 1800 election supporting Jefferson, his rival Jefferson, over Burr.
Whom he considered unprincipled and dangerous, a man without core convictions.
Right. That really sealed their animosity. And ultimately, of course, it led to the fatal duel in Weehawken.
Chernow presents this duel not as just some isolated incident, but as the almost inevitable climax of a life lived with intense passion, an uncompromising sense of honor, and a constant creation of powerful enemies. Hamilton, for all his flaws, was a man of deeply held principles. Chernow highlights this idea, paraphrased from Hamilton's writings. Those who stand for nothing fall for anything.
Wow.
It embodies Hamilton's principled opposition to Burr, whom he saw as a dangerous opportunist. He truly seemed to believe it was better to die for his principles than to allow such a man to gain power unchecked.
So what does this all mean for you? Hamilton's story is far more than just history. It's packed with timeless human lessons, especially as Chernow interprets them.
Definitely.
First, there's this unique insight into how the very absence of privilege and birthright, his illegitimate orphaned beginnings, forged an unparalleled, almost desperate ambition that became the driving force behind his nation-building vision. Chernow argues this outsider status gave him a singular clarity.
Absolutely. And then there's the importance of not just having a vision, but combining it with relentless execution.
Hi.
Hamilton wasn't just a dreamer. He was a brilliant administrator who built the actual institutions needed to execute his plans.
Yeah.
Which tells us, you know, a grand vision is pretty useless without a concrete plan for implementation. He also had the courage to make principled, often deeply unpopular decisions for what he saw as the greater good, not bowing to short-term political pressure.
And his mastery of the written word, Chernow clearly shows that was his superpower.
Oh, for sure.
The ability to articulate complex ideas persuasively, logically, whether in pamphlets, essays, government reports, it allowed him to literally write a nation into existence in a way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
We also see lessons in managing ambition, though. Hamilton's ambition was both his greatest asset and, at times, his greatest liability, wouldn't you say? His pride, his inability to ignore a slight. As we saw, it led directly to his demise. It's a poignant cautionary tale about tempering immense drive with prudence, self-awareness, and maybe some emotional intelligence.
Indeed. And his legacy is truly in institution building. The robust systems he created, the Treasury Department, the National Bank, the nation's credit system, they outlasted him.
Right.
It demonstrates that the most enduring leadership creates structures that persist beyond the leader themselves, and his immigrant contribution is undeniable. That outsider perspective allowed him to see national needs with a clarity that others, maybe too embedded in their regional loyalties, often lacked. It made him a truly national figure.
And finally, that fundamental conflict between Hamilton's desire for a strong, active federal government and Jefferson's preference for limited government and states' rights. That, to me, is the central debate in American politics today. Understanding Hamilton gives you such a deep insight into the ideological foundations of so many contemporary political disputes. It's almost like a historical crystal ball.
Yeah.
It's an extraordinary lens through which to view modern America. Absolutely.
As we wrap up this deep dive into Alexander Hamilton's extraordinary life, let's leave you with three powerful takeaways that truly resonate from Chernow's work.
Okay. First, an emotional insight. The unlikely alchemy of ambition. Hamilton's life uniquely reveals how the profound insecurity of an orphan's beginnings didn't just inspire ambition, but maybe demanded a relentless pursuit of order, legitimacy, and legacy, pushing past perceived limitations in a way few others could.
Second, an intellectual insight. The enduring relevance of institutional design. Hamilton's genius, it seems, lay in creating the frameworks, financial, governmental, legal interest, that transformed a fragile union into a global power. It proves that abstract ideas must be codified into robust systems to truly last. That's a lesson for any leader or, you know, entrepreneur today.
Right. And finally, a universal insight. The complex interplay of principle and pragmatism in leadership. Hamilton teaches us that visionary leaders often face fierce opposition and must sometimes make deeply unpopular decisions, balancing strongly held beliefs with the harsh practicalities of nation building, even if it comes at a significant personal cost.
Ron Chernow's work makes, I think, an irrefutable case. The United States, as we know it, a global economic and military power, is far more a product of Hamilton's vision than perhaps any other founder. It challenges us to consider, what foundational decisions are we making today, perhaps controversial now, that will define the very structure of our future for centuries to come? Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.